All right, everybody, so I think we'll begin. Thank you for joining us today for this webinar on the opportunities in South and Central Asia in the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program for the academic year 2019-2020. My name is Michelle Belorchi, and I'm an outreach and recruitment analyst in IIE's office in Washington, D.C., and I'm joined by my colleague Mary Rolfe Zeller, who is also based in D.C., and she works in the outreach and selection team. So we will get started. There's a lot to cover, and I want to be able to take the questions that you have. So let us move on to the next slide. Okay. All right. So as you know, you may or may not know, the Fulbright program actually has a long legacy, and the Institute of International Education has been administering this program from the inception in 1946. And so over the past 70 years, we've seen the program grow and expand in a lot of different ways. This program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. We refer to it as ECA. And IIE and CIES have been administering this, as I mentioned, from the inception. And I'd like to point out a couple of the pictures that we have here. On the left, the one of our early grantees in 1960 to Burma. And on the right, one of our more recent grantees that took part in the Arctic Initiative Program, which was a very new kind of innovative project that the Fulbright Program has come up with. So just really, this kind of speaks to the evolution of the program and how it's really grown and evolved and expanded across the globe. To give you an idea of what our grantees have done in addition to getting the Fulbright, we've had, first of all, more than 380,000 Fulbrights awarded since 1946. In the U.S. Scholar Program, that equals out to about 800 U.S. scholars going abroad. And in general, we have about 160 countries participating in all dimensions of the program, whether student or scholar, foreign or U.S. And Fulbright scholars are in good company, so lots of heads of states have also been recipients of the grant, Nobel laureates, Pulitzer Prize winners, and MacArthur Fellows and Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients as well. So you're definitely in good company with a Fulbright grant to your name. Today we're going to be discussing the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, so these are the grants to go abroad to teach, research, or do a combination of teaching and research. At the minimum, we have opportunities for 2 months, and at the maximum, we have 1 year, academic year programs. Specifically within the U.S. Scholar Program, we have 125 countries where you can go. So we'll be specifically focusing on South and Central Asia today, but if you're interested in exploring other regions, please check our webinar schedule. We'll have regional webinars held throughout the competition, and we archive those as well. So specifically in the core program, we reach out to faculty and professionals. We also have an administrator's award, and we'll hold a separate webinar for that. But for today's purposes, these awards are open to professionals, meaning artists or people experts in their field who are not in the academic realm, and then faculty who are either independent scholars or who are based at a home institution. We have several all disciplines awards in the region, so this is a great thing. It's very open and welcoming to U.S. scholars. You'll need to apply to you can only apply to one award per competition, and you need to tailor your project accordingly. The deadline this year is August 1st. I'll be going over what kind of institutions you can align with during your time as a Fulbright grantee. First and foremost, in terms of eligibility, I do want to underscore that this is the U.S. Scholar Program, and so the citizenship, U.S. citizenship, is one of the key eligibility requirements. This is a U.S. government-funded program, and so it is for U.S. citizens. If you're a naturalized citizen, you're welcome to apply. If you are a foreign faculty, we do have programs for foreign faculty, but since you're already in the U.S., this may or may not apply to you. If you are tuning in from outside of the U.S., please check with the local U.S. embassy for opportunities there. So other than U.S. citizenship, a lot of the awards do require a PhD or a terminal degree. However, we do have several opportunities that don't require a terminal degree. So again, open to professionals with a master's degree or extensive academic and teaching experience. And in terms of the policies on the Fulbright Scholar Grants, there is a two-year waiting period from the time that your scholar, if your grant ends to the time you reapply for another grant. So if you've completed a grant, let's say in September 2016, you would not be eligible to apply by August 1st this year. You would need to wait until next year, the August 1st, 2019 deadline. So again, you can find that eligibility information on our website. And moving along, let's just dive right into South and Central Asia as a region. There are 14 unique award offerings, and within these awards, there are up to 80 grants available. So some awards have more than one grant, scholarship available. We also have a regional travel program, which I'll be discussing, and all of this information and much more, including blog entries from grantees that have gone to the countries in this region, can be found on the regional webpage. Just look for this icon here in the center of the slide, and you'll be able to also tap into different stories on what were successful grantee projects. And if you check out the Fulbright Scholar Directory, which I'll be showing at the end, you can also reach out to former grantees that have gone to institutions or countries that you're interested in. And if you'd like to get more information, you're more than welcome to contact them. So the first award that I want to discuss is the multi-country opportunity that we have in South and Central Asia called the South and Central Asia Regional Research Program. This is a wonderful opportunity, and there are two grants available for this. You, as an applicant, can select up to a minimum of two, maximum of three countries within the region, specifically listed here on the slide, to propose a research project. The grant length can be 3 to 9 months. And the research project is a wonderful opportunity to kind of dive deeper into the region and the issues that are relevant and that kind of cross borders and boundaries within the region. And so the regional research program does require a letter of invitation from each of the hosts in the respective countries. However, there is an exception for India. So more of this information can be found when you go on the award description. A PhD is not required for this award, so postdoc applicants and professionals and artists are welcome to apply. And as I mentioned, there are two grant opportunities in this award. The next one I'd like to highlight is the Distinguished Chair opportunity. It's available in India. This is the only Distinguished Chair award in the region. And there are up to five grants for this one. This is specifically an all disciplines award, so that means it's open to people from all, a range of disciplines. There's no preference stated, but specifically to teach or, carry out teaching and research. Now, if you do the combination of teaching and research, you need to determine that ratio, what would be relevant to your project. The grant length for this is strictly 4 months, so it cannot be extended, but 4 months is typically a semester, so that would be a great way to engage. And a letter of invitation from a host institution in India is not required. However, it is helpful if you do identify a potential host institution and perhaps also reach out to gauge interest and relevance of your project to that host. So the Distinguished Chair is required to be a full-rank professor. And they're also looking for, a well-established kind of publication record. And in that case, emeriti faculty are also welcome to apply. So that is something that, and of course, India you know, English is definitely a language that is used across the country in terms of teaching and research. I myself recently moved from there, so if you have any questions specifically about how teaching and research can be done in India, it's absolutely feasible in English. The libraries there, you know, have all the books that you hope to find in English, in the English language, and all the faculty, at least in the major cities, are well-versed. Of course, preference is always given, in general in the Fulbright program, preference is always given to projects that engage, you know, that are in smaller towns or smaller cities across the country. But certainly this is something to check out if you do have a long list of publications and you have the rank of full professor. I certainly encourage you to check this opportunity out. So moving along to the All Disciplines Awards, and we have a lot of these in the region. As I mentioned, this South and Central Asia region actually is really open to just really kind of receiving, you know, professionals and academics who are looking to make an impact. You may be oftentimes the first Fulbright grantee to an institution, so you would really be able to kind of make an impact and make connections and collaborate with an institution that maybe didn't have a connection beforehand. The first award that I'd like to discuss is the other award we have to India. This one is the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. Now, for this award, we have 45 grant opportunities. So this is by far the largest award in the Fulbright Scholar Catalog. So 45 grant opportunities for teaching, research, or a combination of both. For this award, a PhD is not required, and you know, postdoc applicants, early career academics, are more than welcome to apply. Again, a letter of invitation is optional for this. You can find out more information. 9379IN is the grant number, the award number. Then we have an option for all disciplines in Kazakhstan. This one is strictly 5 or 10 months of a grant length, and that coincides with their semester that they'd like to have the grantee there. And in Kazakhstan, they're also trying to, you know, make English language kind of a third language in the country. And so there's a real push to have teaching in English occur in the STEM subjects, in all subjects for that matter, but certainly that's on the Ministry of Education's agenda to expand English language teaching and all of that. So Kazakhstan's very interested to have American scholars come to their country, so I certainly recommend checking out Kazakhstan. It's one of the more open countries in terms of all kinds of research and the universities that are set up there, so there's some great opportunities in Kazakhstan to check out. Kyrgyz Republic also has an All Disciplines Award, again, looking for a scholar to commit for a semester or two semesters, and there are, I believe, 2 grants available there. If you do the teaching and research combination, they ask that that be 50-50 ratio, so equal parts. And, oh, sorry, there's up to 5 grants in the Kyrgyz Republic. There is a requirement of a PhD or terminal degree, and for this award, there are specific disciplines and specializations that they prefer. They're open to all disciplines, but again, be on the lookout for those preferences in terms of discipline. And then we have the Maldives. The Republic of the Maldives has 1 grant available for all disciplines. Again, they do also list some specializations that they're interested in relating to tourism and environmental sciences and things like that. So that's something, wonderful opportunity. There's the university in Malé, which is the main university there. There's also the government institutions you might want to reach out to. There's some links and some helpful info on the award description to reach out and kind of make connections there. They're looking for a grantee for 6 months, and the grant date would start in January of 2020. And then coming on to moving over to Nepal. We have 2 awards in Nepal, so the first one I want to highlight is the research-only grant. And this is for 6 months if you do it all in one segment, and then there is a flex option available, but that would be reduced to 4 to 5 months. So the research-only grant has specific host institutions that they've outlined on the grant details. So there's, you know, the Law University in Bhaktapur, there's the Bhutan Academy of Health Sciences, so specifically looking for kind of health law, and then there's Tribhuvan University, which has campuses in all disciplines are, accepted throughout, and then Kathmandu University, which has a couple different campuses. So this is a research-only grant, and we do also have, moving along to the teaching and research grant, however, this has more of a preference for teaching. The ratio is 80 to 20, teaching and research. And so again, preferences, of course, are given to applicants who indicate interest in institutions outside of Kathmandu, but of course, you know, all applicants are welcome to propose any relevant project to Nepal. And then moving on to Pakistan, we have up to 5 grants available in Pakistan, and the commission there, the Fulbright Commission, is very active in ensuring that the Fulbright grantees are well looked after. They specifically restrict grantees being placed in these 3 cities, Islamabad, Lahore, and Faisalabad, and dependents are not allowed to accompany grantees to Pakistan. The grant lengths are 2 to 4 months, and again, they do have some preferences listed in terms of disciplines and specializations in the award description. And then Sri Lanka, another great destination. They also have a very active Fulbright Commission in Colombo, an all disciplines award for 3 to 9 months. And I believe they have some contact information there if you'd like to get more information. Again, preference is given to projects that are located outside of Colombo. But again, it's just preference. And then moving on to Uzbekistan, again, they're looking for a grantee for the semester or for the full academic year. And there are a couple grants available there. And more information you can find in terms of preferred disciplines and specializations on the grant information there. So that concludes the all disciplines. Again, all disciplines awards really dominate the award offerings in this region, but we also have a few others called multiple disciplines. So multiple disciplines are a little more specific than the all disciplines award. They are open to several disciplines, but only those specific ones listed in the award. And so for Bhutan, we have 1 grant that is available. They've listed things like journalism, communications, business. You can find all the different awards, award preferences, the discipline preferences listed there. For Bhutan, a letter of invitation should actually not be sought. They will place you according to the project that you've proposed. So you should not have any kind of hopes or anticipations that you'll be placed at one particular institution. But they are looking for a grantee, preferably to stay 2 semesters to really have an impact and kind of build capacity at the institution. And so you can check out more information there. Grantees to Bhutan are required to attend the orientation in India. So you would fly into Delhi first and have the orientation with the Fulbright Commission in Delhi. And Tajikistan also has a multiple disciplines award. A letter of invitation in this case is preferred, but the specific host institutions are listed there on the grant, so you can, you know, easily reach out and already have an idea of where you would be placed. The grant length is 4 to 9 months. And then lastly, Turkmenistan, again, just like Bhutan, a letter of invitation from a host institution should not be sought. The American Embassy administers, you know, kind of facilitates the program in that country, and so they will place you where the government feels there's a need for a grantee. So this is specifically a teaching grant, and they are looking for 10 years of teaching experience if you don't have a PhD, and 5 years if you do have a PhD. So again, this is more of a kind of capacity building grant, and it's a wonderful opportunity to make a difference in that country. In terms of teaching. Excuse me. And then the other award I wanted to highlight, this is a different award that we have to Kazakhstan, is the Teaching English as a Foreign Language. There's one grant available to do this, and a PhD is required. The emphasis for this award, as I mentioned, Kazakhstan is really pushing to, you know, have English as kind of one of the languages of the instruction. And so the emphasis really here on teacher training and kind of train the trainer. So training the English teachers, developing curriculum, things like that. And so this is a wonderful opportunity for grantees who have a background in linguistics, in TEFL. And so the grant length, again, would be one or two semesters. They offer a generous book and research allowance so that you can bring materials with you on your grant, you know, from the U.S. to Kazakhstan, and we arrange for the shipping and all of that. That's part of the grant. And then the anticipation is, of course, that those materials stay at that institution, you know, have that legacy so that the institution has those references and things to draw upon. There is also a generous allowance for accompanying dependents, for school tuition and things like that. So ideally, you know, staying for the full academic year would be something that they'd be open to, would be preference to, but of course the one semester option is available as well. So that's the Teaching English as a Foreign Language in Kazakhstan. And then the last thing that I wanted to go over specific to the South and Central Asia region are the grantee opportunities that are available once you've been selected, once you've been considered a grantee, you're already in the country. These are opportunities that you can apply for while you're there during your grant. So the first one is the South and Central Asia Fulbright Regional Travel Grant. This is a wonderful opportunity to engage more in the region beyond the country that is hosting you. So let's say if you're based in India and you'd like to, you know, you have some connections or a collaboration that you'd like to pursue in Nepal or in Sri Lanka, you could reach out and perhaps, you know, host a workshop or a conference or teach for a few days. And so this gives you the opportunity up to 2 weeks to travel within the region to one country and provides the funding for that. The other opportunity we have available is the South and Central Asia Fulbright Mid-Year Conference. So in this region, the Commission in New Delhi in India is the largest commission kind of really active within the region, and they host the South and Central Asia Mid-Year Conference. It's typically held in February and March. So if you are in the region during that time and your grant is taking place during, you know, during that time, you would be eligible to apply for you know, funding to be able to go to that grant, if you're to that conference, if you're not based in India. And this is a wonderful opportunity to network with Fulbright grantees across the region, not only from the scholar program, but from the student program as well. And so it's a huge to-do. They just concluded it a couple of weeks ago. It was held in Delhi this year. But it's usually held throughout different cities in India, usually where there's the consulate presence as well. So this is something to look out for, great way to make connections, to see the work that, you know, grantees like you are doing across the region. There's, you know, exhibits and performances and lectures and seminars. So the mid-year conference is definitely something that you want to be a part of if you're in the region during that time.
Hi, everyone. So now that Michelle's done a really great job of going over all of the specific awards that are available in the South Central Asia region, I want to take a step back and look at how Fulbright works for you, what awards will be available to you, the types, and then also the how to apply. So the first thing is there are flex options available. So flex is available in 6 countries within the SCA region, and they're designed for scholars who require multiple visits to a host country over short segments of time. So you're not necessarily applying for a flex grant, you're just applying for the flex option of grant length within your grant. Applicants must indicate plans for flex in their project statement, and this includes a project timeline in that project statement. We want to see that you're prepared, that you've done your homework, and that you know what the timing is going to be like. Plex grantees are especially encouraged to make contact with the local community to develop long-term connections and collaborations, because since you're only going to be there for short periods of time, we want to make sure that you're still having that long-lasting cultural impact on the community. And then, so if you want to see what countries, what awards have this Flex option, you're going to find it in the award description for each individual award. And I'll show you how to do that later on. The next thing is the multi-country awards. And Michelle talked a little bit about those already. We've also got the Global Scholar Award. So with the Global Scholar Award, this is separate from the awards available in South Central Asia. This is an opportunity if you're looking to go to multiple world regions. So say you're interested in going to India, but you also want to go to Guatemala. This would be an award that you might want to look into, and we actually will have further information on it later this summer via webinars and email messaging. So as far as home university affiliation isn't required, so if you're not a professor right now, that's okay. You could be a professional or some sort of an artist or an independent scholar, or you could even be retired. All of those applicants are welcome. We have different awards that have different requirements, so just make sure to check again in the award details that you fulfill the requirements needed. And then also, if you are an academic, we have awards available at any stage in your career. So if you're a postdoc within 5 years of receiving your PhD, if you're just early career, or if you're even a distinguished chair and have been in your field for 10, 15, 20 years. So now we're going to go into the website and look at the specific resources that we have available for you guys to check out. So that way you don't have to hear our voice all the time. You can also just go online and look for yourself. So the first thing is the website. So that's going to be right here. And this is cis.org. And this website just has a plethora of information available to you. It has the catalog of awards, so it has all of those awards that you can apply to. You're going to find those on the website. It's also going to have the application link, which is EMBARC, the application instructions. So these will be step-by-step instructions on how to actually fill in the information on the application. We're also going to have guidelines, project statement guidance, and even samples. This is where you'll also find information on webinars, so where to sign up for more webinars. The Fulbright Scholar blog, which is information about current grantees or people that want to write about their past experiences with Fulbright. And then also My Fulbright, which is a way for you to register your interest. When you sign up, you'll be signing up and saying, I'm interested in Pakistan and I'm an engineer. And so we'll be able to send you any sort of messaging that we send out about Pakistan and or engineering. And so that's a really great way for us to just reach out to you. So we're going to go on and go into the website really quickly because I just want to show you how to navigate through all of these. So what you'll do is here's our program website. And now on the main page, we've got a lot of great information. You've got the catalog of awards. So this is, again, the kind of meat and potatoes of the website as far as finding those opportunities. Right now, we can just go generally and look in South and Central Asia. But you'll notice once we go into this web page that you can search through many more specific details. So we can look by specific country. And if you start typing, then it will pre-populate. We've also got, if you want to look for any multi-country opportunities, for disciplines, so again, you can choose as many disciplines as you'd like, or as few. Go through and click. We've also got the grant activity. So if you're only interested in maybe teaching and not research, you've got that option. Grant length, if you can go for a long time or just a shorter amount of time. Degree requirements, so if you have a PhD versus not having a PhD. Category, so for all intents and purposes of this webinar, you're going to be looking at core, and so you can also exclude based on your professional profile in this. And Invitation letter. So invitation letters, we're going to talk about that in a little bit too, but this is just where the host is acknowledging that they'd like to host you at their university. So if we go back into the presentation, we can also show you on the website where the application is. So we've got this great page, and this links to the application as well as instructions for you. And it's always best to actually use this application. So going through the website and clicking on the application via this means versus just bookmarking it. Sometimes if you bookmark the application, it's actually going to take you to the wrong thing. So always just navigate to your application through our website. And then so another way is going up to program. So if we go back to the main page, you'll see this. Scholars, core. And so if you go to core, then you'll kind of find this main page. Again, we've got another link to the catalog of awards. We've also got information on eligibility, so U.S. citizenship, if you've had a previous Fulbright grant, information on that. And then we've also got what you need to include in your application, the application guidelines. We'll look at teaching and research. That includes everything. So these are the links, again, to the application, guidance for project statement. So we've got information on the formatting as well as the actual content. So these are really great, especially if you've kind of got writer's block for a bit. Look at these questions and make sure that you're answering them, and that'll really get you started. That'll also help kind of form your project statement a little bit more. And then if we go back in again, we've got the webinars. I'll show you where that is. Yeah, and so what the great thing about our webinars are that we host them all throughout the summer, but then also within 5 business days of us hosting this, we're going to put it online. And so the best way to do that is go over here, and we will go to what's new. And then what you'll see is we've got a PDF of the PowerPoint, and we've got the audio, and then we've also got, obviously, the combination of the audio video. So that way, if you happen to miss it or if you have to dip out a little early in this presentation, you can always go back and check later. And the way you get to that on our MAVE page is actually just down here. And then lastly is that the blog and my Fulbright. So the blog, again, this is a great resource to kind of just be inspired by Fulbright, see what other people are up to, see how it's impacted them, just give you a really great sense of camaraderie with the Fulbright program. And again, my Fulbright, this is the registration tool for sharing your interests with us, so that way we can reach out to you. And you will have to create an account. It's very simple. You can pick as many details or as little detail as you'd like to narrow down your interest. Okay? So as far as application components, I just showed you online very briefly a long list of components, and this includes some specific information about page requirements, margin formatting, font, things like that. But just generally, so what you'll have is the application form, and this is going to be your filling out your name, your address, your phone number, any of your past academic experience, things like that. And then you've got your project statement. Your project statement is something you're going to attach to your application, and this is really the heart of your application. This is in 3 to 5 pages. You're telling us what you want to do, where you want to go, why you want to do it, and why we should choose you as a Fulbrighter. The next thing you're going to do is send us a copy of your CV or your resume. This is what's going to kind of legitimize you. Say, look at this work I've done in the past. This is how I've started to either build my career or have built my career, and this proves why I would be a good Fulbrighter as well. Then you've got your letters of reference. There are going to be 3 letters of reference that you'll need, and potentially you might need a language reference, but that's separate from these 3 letters of reference. These are going to be people, either supervisors and or people that you've worked with in the past, that are going to be able to show the breadth of your academic reach as well as what they think of you as a Fulbrighter and a representative of the U.S. Then you've got some different components, and these are going to vary based on the type of award that you're applying to. If you're applying to a teaching grant versus a research grant, or both, If you're applying to an award where you need to prove language proficiency, if a letter of invitation is required, or if you're in a certain specialization, you might need to upload supplemental materials, like in photography, you might want to upload photographs, journalism, writing samples, different things like that. So your project statement, we can dive into this just a little bit more. So the project statement is your opportunity to lay out your proposed project specifics in as much detail as possible. So we know that you're only doing this in 3 to 5 pages, but this is 3 to 5 pages for you to tell us exactly what you want to accomplish and how you're going to do it. So you're going to say, why Fulbright? Why this specific program to accomplish what you need to do? Why can't you do it through another type of grant or just through your university? And then also, why this country, the institution that you've chosen, or the organization? What is the reason that you need to go to Kazakhstan instead of sitting at your desk all day? Or what separates Kazakhstan from Germany? And then you want to make sure to focus on what you plan to do. And so this is going to be, if you're teaching, you want to talk about your methodology, the importance of the course actually that you want to offer, and how your students will play a role in that, what they'll learn, what you'll be able to learn, and what the school can then do with maybe what the courses you're teaching. And then also, if you're researching, what the goals of your research are going to be, what's going to come out of this project. And then again, even more larger, is just the outcomes of the grant. So what's the impact going to be on the host, the home institution, and you? Remember, Fulbright is kind of all-encompassing as far as who it should be impacting. It should be impacting the country while you're over there. It should be impacting the country after you even leave. But it should also be impacting you personally and the U.S., so your home institution, and just maybe your field in general. And then also, the last thing you want to make sure to include is that, how adaptable are you? Remember, you're going overseas, and that's challenging. You might have proposed a project, and then when you get there, you realize the certain type of tools that you needed, you might not have at that university. So how can you think on your toes and quickly deal with creating kind of a new project or adapting what you already have? And also just challenging situations. How might you deal with either a cultural barrier or a language barrier that you might not have been expecting? So affiliations and invitations. So obviously when you're going overseas, you're going to affiliate either with a university or some sort of organization or institution. And so how do you even get that started? So what you'll want to do is look in the catalog of awards. If the award does not state a specific host, then you kind of are free to choose wherever you want to go. And what you can do is either rely on either contacts that you already have in that country, or if you're looking at just establishing brand new contacts, you can either reach out to people through maybe your home campus. Did your home campus affiliate with anybody? Have any previous Fulbrighters gone to this country? Where did they affiliate? You can look at that through the scholar directory and kind of get some inspiration there. Or the other thing, too, is you can just cold call reach out to people. What you should do is just give them a copy of your CV and your resume and maybe your project statement and say, I'm interested in applying for a Fulbright. I think that we could potentially have a really great connection as far as you hosting. Would you be open to this? Do you like the project that I've set forth? In what way can I assist you? And so what they would do is, if they were interested, they would write a letter of invitation. And this is a non-binding expression of interest. It's important to note that. So just because you receive a letter of invitation does not mean that you're guaranteed a grant. And this should also be from somebody that you're going to be collaborating with. So this should be somebody that you're going to connect with once you're over there. Some departments overseas might also be wanting approval from, department heads or deans or presidents or something like that. That's something that you'll work out once you connect with them. And then the other qualification is that this letter of invitation should be on institutional letterhead. It should be relatively official. You want it to look like they really are inviting you, that they've taken some time to consider your proposal, and that you've considered, you've taken some time to really establish a relationship with them. So we've given you some information about the specific details of your application, but then overall, just how do you submit a competitive application? So the biggest thing about the Fulbright program is the goal is promoting mutual understanding. What does that mean? That means that, you know, you're giving something to your host, but your host is also giving something to you, and that you're creating this wonderful collaboration. And you just need to make sure that you continue to acknowledge that that is the heart of the program. You're not going over selfishly because you want to publish this book because you think that this book is great for your career and that's it. You want to make sure that you're promoting that mutual understanding. And then you also want to explain why you're interested in Fulbright and why you've proposed to go in this country. We've already talked about this a little bit, but again, why is Fulbright necessary to do what you want to do? And then professional expertise and skills you can offer, making sure that, you know, if you're an artist that you're doing maybe some sort of art project and you're not all of a sudden going over to learn about how to be a mechanical engineer. Probably not the best idea. Again, this is a cultural diplomacy program, and so you want to demonstrate your flexibility and adaptability. You want to make sure that you can be a really great representative for the U.S. and also for your host or for your home country. And then you want to also stress the outcomes impact and the just the multiplier effect of this program. So you want to create these lasting relationships, this lasting impact with your grant. And so this will be your own professional development. It'll happen on your host campus, your home campus, the students that you've come across in all walks of life, and what future collaborations are you creating through this? Are you creating some sort of exchange? Do you have some sort of research program set up? Do you connect your classes via Skype somehow? Anything like that. And then just overall, how are you internationalizing your campus and your curriculum too at your home university and your host university? So just really quickly before we wrap up, we're just going to go over the review process and the timeline. So from now until August, you have to get that application together, written, and submitted. So what happens in August is the staff is going to review your application for completeness. So that's our technical review. So maximum of 5 pages, that you've only submitted 5, not 6, 7, 8, or 9. In September, your application is going to be reviewed by a discipline committee. So if you're an anthropologist, it'll be read by other anthropologists. If you're a mechanical engineer, it'll be read by mechanical engineers. They're looking to see that you're talking about a worthy topic within the discipline. What will happen next is their comments are going to go to peer reviewers. And so these are Fulbright alumni that went to the geographical region that you've applied to. So if you're applying for Russia, these will likely be Russian alumni of the program, and they're going to be looking at your overall suitability for the program. So the project that you've proposed as well as its place within Russia. And then what's going to happen after that is you'll either be recommended or not recommended for further review. If you're recommended for further review, you're going to be reviewed by the host country that you've applied to, and then also the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, the FFSB, which includes the State Department as well. If they all agree that you have a solid application and that they want you as a grantee, then you're going to be notified anytime February through May on a rolling basis. So just because your friend applied to Japan and already heard back doesn't mean that you won't hear back a few months later about your application to Azerbaijan. And then if you are awarded a grant May through June, you'll end up receiving your grantee information. So you might be notified as early as February, but then you won't get any sort of grantee stuff until later in the year. And then so, you know, we talked a lot today. You'll probably have more questions that we don't get to, and so we want to give you some resources that you can connect to and just keep Fulbright in your mind at all times. Again, my Fulbright, that's at cif2.org. That's where you can register your interest and have us reach out to you. If you have specific questions, you can email us at southcentralasia@iie.org. Again, we've got a link to our website again where you can find all of that great application material, and other information. And then you can also refer your colleagues. So maybe if this isn't a good time for you to apply for a Fulbright, but you know somebody else that would be really interested, you can use our referral initiative and register them and say, and we'll reach out to them and say, oh, a colleague has referred you for the program. We'd like to tell you more about it. And then, of course, you can connect with us on social media, Fulbright Twitter, or Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Great. Well, thank you, Mary Rolfe, for going over all of the intricacies and all the great information that we have for applicants in the process as they apply. We do have some questions that have come in, and I'm going to just start with what we've got from questions that came in beforehand. So one question is one able to apply as a Flex Award and a Global Scholar? And yes, so the Global Scholar Award that Mary Rolfe discussed does have a Flex option. And so for the Global Scholar Award, keep in mind two of the countries need to be, if you're doing two or three countries, at least two of them have to be located in different world regions. So one could be, one or two could be in South and Central Asia, but then a third one, if there's a third one, would need to be outside of that region. So you can check the different regions, and you know, we use the same mapping kind of as the U.S. State Department, so take a look at that. In terms of, let's see what the next question is.
So we've got another about the difference between what's a full professor versus early career, maybe versus where does associate professor fall in between all of that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So in terms of the Distinguished Chair Award that I discussed, that specific award requires rank of full professor. If you are below that, if you're at the assistant or associate level, you're more than welcome to apply for the other award in India, which is the Academic and Professional Excellence Award, Fulbright Nehru. And again, that one also has 45 grants, so it's a great opportunity. But the Distinguished Chair, typically across the catalog, would at least prefer full rank, full-time professors with a distinguished publication record.
And if you're ever concerned about where you think you might fall in as far as your rank, you can always email us and send us a copy of your CV, and we can review it and guide you a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. We also have a question about postdoc researchers. Are they eligible to apply for a Flex Award? So it's not necessarily are postdocs eligible for a Flex. It's more, is the award open to postdoc applicants, and does the award allow for the Flex option? So that's kind of one way to navigate it. We could, Mary Rolfe showed you how to navigate the catalog. What you could do is in the search fields, you could search for awards that have that are open to early career postdoc applicants that have a Flex option, and then you could get just those, just that listing of awards, so you could filter it that way. And explain how the Flex option, I think we've discussed that, so that's good. Can I communicate with an alumni to evaluate my chances for acceptance? So that question came in. Absolutely. So the Fulbright Scholar directory that we have on our website is a great way to connect. You can search, once again, we're going to just kind of bring it up to show you. You can search according to discipline, according to home institution, host institution. So let's say you're at the University of Southern California, right? And you'd like to see who else perhaps, who else at USC has gone on a Fulbright grant. So you could search by host. Or perhaps you're an artist. You want to see what other artists, what other grantees have gone as artists, where have they gone, what kind of projects have they proposed, and so you can look up arts, and you can even find specializations, but let's just keep it broad, and you can say, all right, let's see what people went to in South and Central Asia, where they went, what kind of host institutions they had, and you could contact them. Their name is there, you could write them an email, and so the Fulbright Scholar Directory, I can't underscore how useful it is. You could also see if any foreign Fulbright faculty have come from abroad to your institution. And so you can see here we've pulled up one scholar's information. She was an artist, and she was based at the University of Mumbai during her grant. And if we scroll down, can we see her? Yeah, and her project title was Faces Weaving Narratives. And so you can get an idea a little bit about what they've done, and then you can try and reach out to them as well. So the Scholar Directory is one way to connect with alumni. Well, I'll also be hosting, specifically for India, on April 24th, I'll be hosting a webinar called Spotlight on India, and we will be joined by a former grantee to India who will share experiences about their experience there. So tune in on April 24th. Also check out the other webinars that we'll be holding discipline-wise. So if you are interested specifically in learning about opportunities, for example, in law or in business and economics or in the STEM field, and you're not sure if you just want to stick with the South and Central Asia region, we'll be going through global opportunities in those disciplines. And so Mary Rolfe is showing the different webinars that are upcoming. So there's one on STEM. You would just click on it. You can register directly there. That's on May 8th. And once you click there, you just fill in your information, just as you did for this one. So lots of webinars coming up. Normally, we usually held them on Wednesdays. Today's a Wednesday, so it's Webinar Wednesday. But we've got so many topics to cover and so many regions and opportunities that now, during up until the end of July, most of our webinars will actually be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. They'll always be, usually be around 2 o'clock Eastern Time. Again, we do archive them for your viewing after, if you're not able to attend a specific webinar. So be on the lookout for that. Okay, so in terms of language restrictions, I have a question about Nepal. Again, I would say in terms of for language requirements and things of that nature, do check out the specific award description and the details. Each one in the region is going to be different. There's not one rule for all. So, for example, for India, for teaching, and in fact, for all of the countries, teaching is usually in English. But for some of the Central Asian countries, there is a preference for a little bit of local language kind of fluency so that you can get around. For research, a lot of times they do want some kind of proof of language sufficient enough to conduct the research. So it, again, it depends on if you're doing teaching, if you're just doing research, or a combination. Check the award descriptions for the exact wording, and you can always reach out to us for more clarification. Let's see. What other questions we've got? We have just a few more minutes to take some questions. Okay, so what is the requirement for grantees once they're finished with the award and the duration in terms of presenting their work in the U.S.? So really, we hope that you address this in the project statement in terms of the impact, not only during your grant to the host country and the host institution, but that you also discuss kind of the multiplier effect, kind of the legacy of what you hope this Fulbright will do for you once you return to the U.S. How will it impact your home institution, or if you're independent, how will this benefit your future work and the audiences that you reach out to? So having some discussion in that, and of course all grantees complete the mid-year report and then the final report at the end of their grant and kind of convey all of that information.
We got another question about citizenship and if you were previously born in the country that you're looking to go to or if you're a naturalized citizen. Can you just speak more about that generally?
Sure. So in the case, I'm guessing maybe it's India. Yeah, okay, India. So India, of course, does have some special visa situations. If you are a U.S. citizen and OCI holder, overseas citizen of India, that should be fine. Research is allowed to be conducted. But again, when it comes to all of that information in terms of, getting the visas and the clearances, or if you don't have an OCI that you have to get, the necessary visas, all of that will take place once you've been selected. We have several weeks and months to help you in that. But yes, definitely, if you were born in India but you're now a U.S. citizen, you are welcome to apply.
And typically you'll find any sort of information about citizenship restrictions in either additional comments or somewhere in the award details.
Yes, and on that note, let me add that this is specifically in the case of India that I just referenced. We do also, have restrictions for other countries. For example, for Germany, applicants who are dual nationals
are not eligible. For example, if they also hold a German passport, in that case, they would not be eligible to apply for an award to Germany. So do look out for those kind of restrictions. It may also be for Australia, I can't remember, but for Spain. So there are a few countries in the catalog that do not allow for dual nationals to apply.
So another question is about grant stipends. So what's really actually included if you go to grant?
Right. So if you go onto the award details, and we have the one award here for Nepal, if you click on award benefits, you can see directly you can see directly what's included in terms of the stipend, if there's housing included, if they'll assist you with finding housing, if there's any kind of allowance for dependents, baggage allowance, relocation, book allowance, all of those different benefits are outlined under the award benefits tab.
And then, so if you happen to be searching for your specialization and you don't find it, how's a good way to go about that? So, for instance, if design doesn't pop up in your filtered search.
So if you're not able to find that exactly in our specialization, just broaden your search to that discipline. So if it falls under art, then go there, or if it falls under architecture. So just kind of think broadly, because the search that we have is kind of a the basic academic discipline. Once you then get those awards in arts or architecture, then in the specializations or perhaps in the preferred kind of topics that they want, you would find the preferences listed there. But that's one way, is just to do more of a broader search.
And you can also always try the keyword search and see if something will pop up.
Exactly. So, for example, someone asked me recently about conflict management. So you wouldn't necessarily find that. It's not a discipline. It's a specialization within a discipline. But if you type in conflict management, you will find some awards that are under law that you have that listed. So, or international studies. So that's one way, to do the keyword search.
So also, again, kind of in the same realm of disciplines, how do you know if an award might have a specialization preference?
Right. So again, the key is to click on the award description here, the details, and usually at the bottom they'll mention, yep, specifically for discipline type, it says please see the specializations, and the specializations are listed here, including security studies, policy, and political science. So a lot of awards that are all disciplines may, a lot of them will specify, we are open to all disciplines, however, these are preferred. And it'll still be a long list, so that's absolutely fine. They want to be open, but do look out for that. The idea is to find the award where your profile matches the award as close as possible for the best fit.
So we have a question about eligibility and former Fulbright grantees and that two-year wait period.
Right. So in terms of how many Fulbrights can you get, so to speak, there isn't a cap. There are no lifetime limits on how many Fulbrights you can apply for and receive. However, there is the two-year waiting period, and that applies to 2 years in the sense of when your grant was completed to when you're applying for the next one. So as I mentioned, August 1st is the deadline this year, so August 2018. If you completed a grant in September of 2016, you would actually need to wait for the following competition. Okay. We have actually crossed the 3 o'clock hour, so I think we can just maybe take one more question and then close it. I just want to thank everybody for tuning in and taking the time out to learn more about the opportunities in South and Central Asia. We will take our last question, and again, reach out to me. My email is southandcentralasia@iie.org. We will archive this, and it'll be ready next week. So what question are we going to take, Mary Rolfe?
So we have a question about full professors and tenure, and how does that work as far as your eligibility for an award?
Okay. So you don't, again, I would take a look at the award description and the details. They usually don't mention tenured, but more of a rank. So if you are at the full rank of a full professor rank, that is really what they're looking for, or associate or assistant level. That will all be clearly mentioned. If you happen to be an adjunct professor, that's absolutely fine. If you're not tenured, that's also fine. So again, it's more of the rank rather than the status of the university. So on that note, I think we'll wrap it up. And again, thank you for everyone for attending. And Mary Rolfe and I enjoyed hosting the webinar for you. And we look forward to helping you with your application and assisting you through this process.
And again, always feel free to reach out. We're available on email and phone, my Fulbright, our website. You have lots of resources to digest now.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.